Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening this morning. In the first hour of the program today, we'll be talking about fathers and sons and the ways in which we as men, are all shaped by the relationship that we have with our fathers. And our guest for the program is Samuel Osherson. He's the author of a book that first came out in the mid-80s and has just recently been republished. The title is Finding Our Fathers, How a Man's Life is Shaped by His Relationship with His Father. First came out in 1986, and in June of this year was republished, and it's published by Contemporary Books. So it's out there in bookstore if you'd like to take a look at it. And of course, as we talk this morning about this subject, you're certainly welcome to call with your questions and comments. Our guest is chair of the psychology faculty at the Fielding Institute. He also teaches at Harvard Medical School, and in addition is a psychotherapist in private practice. In addition to his teaching experience at Harvard, he's also taught at MIT and the University of Massachusetts and lectures widely to both professional and lay audiences. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome. All you need to do to be a part of the conversation is pick up the telephone. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number to call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere that signal will travel. You can use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Dr. Osherson, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us today.
A pleasure. Thank you.
What, back in the 80s, when you started thinking about this and started writing about this and first created this book, was there something specific that got you thinking about maybe either your relationship with your father or perhaps what it meant to you to be a father?
Well, I think any book, David, comes out of the intersection of professional interests and our personal life. And I, at the time I started to write Finding Our Fathers, I was doing psychological research. I had the opportunity to be interviewing I was directing a study of men in their 40s who had graduated college and had been studied in their 30s and 40s, and I was re-interviewing them as they aged into their 40s. And I was not particularly interested, actually, in fathers. I was more interested in what happened to men in terms of their work and family choices. And as I interviewed these men, who were many of them quite successful in terms of their work choices and family life, I kept hearing stories about their fathers, and you know, these were grown men, successful men, many of whom felt like things were not quite right with their dads, or that they hadn't worked things out as much as they had hoped, and that surprised me. In my personal life at the time as well, interestingly, I was going through some difficulties. My wife and I were starting our family, and we had gone through some miscarriages and all, and I found myself thinking a lot about my own father and how he kind of dealt with some of life's adversities, and kind of wished that I could talk more to him about those matters. So in that sense, I think Finding Our Fathers really came out of both of those kinds of experiences.
It is the case, I think, that particularly because of the women's movement within the last few decades, some men, at least, one doesn't know exactly how many, but some men have been thinking about what it means to be a man generally. Mm-hmm. And have perhaps questioned the kind of job description that they received from their fathers, and maybe not in a direct way, but as we know, that one of the things that fathers do for their sons is that they teach us what it is to be a man. They may not do this in a very direct way. They do it because they're just doing what they do, and we watch. Mm-hmm. But it, and maybe we can talk in a minute about whether things really have changed or how much things have changed. But sticking with this point of the idea that we sort of learn what it is to be a man from our fathers, how much, I wonder, do you think sometimes of our feeling of disconnection from our fathers, it comes from the feeling that we didn't quite get what we needed to know. That is, that somehow we feel that something about the, you know, something about what it was we were supposed to be doing as men, we didn't get it. It was as if they forgot to tell us something really important.
Well, you know, I think my hunch is that most men struggle with the question of wondering what it really takes to be a man. You know, Mark Twain once wrote that at the age of 12, a boy starts imitating a man and just keeps on doing that the rest of his life. And I think Twain was onto something, which is that growing up, it's often difficult for us as boys to really get a clear idea about what it is like to be a grown man and what men feel and how they deal with all the pressures on them. There's so much expectation on boys, and I think this is still true in our culture, so much expectation on boys to learn a male role that emphasizes, achievement and providing and protecting your family. And those are important things, actually, for boys to learn. But I think the corresponding thing is that often we don't really get a clear sense of what our fathers feel as they go about their life being a man. And I think that in adult life, one of the tasks for many of us as men is to, you know, really think about who are we and what do we want for ourselves. And I think often we look at our fathers and just kind of wished we had gotten a little bit more, even though often our fathers did the best they could and often tried to give it to us. But I think many of us kind of yearn still that there would be someone out there who could give us the answer of, you know, what does it really mean to be a man?
Mm. I really like the quote from Mark Twain. That just gives me one more reason to admire Mr. Clemens. I like that a lot. And it leads me maybe to have us talk a little bit about just how much men have changed. Now, certainly the men that I know who have children seem to me to be very different than our fathers were. They seem to be certainly much more involved with their children and parenting. Maybe not as much as they could or should, but that's certainly one difference. It does seem to be that that men also don't quite have the same slavish dedication to job and career, mm-hmm. although that is still there. And as much as things might have changed over the last two decades, I find myself wondering, in fact, how much men have changed and how different we are and whether we are, in fact, as different as we would like to think from our fathers.
Well, my hunch is, David, that the answer is yes and no. You know, that we're different from our fathers in some ways, and we're like them in other ways. I think a big moment of recognition in most men's lives is when they realize that they are indeed their father's son, and that means that they are like their father in very profound ways. You know, if you look at data, it is true that fathers spend more time with their families than many of their fathers did, and I think that the women's movement and a number of other changes have created a generation of fathers who really do expect that they're going to be more involved with their families than their own fathers were. But I think that the pressures on men are still very enormous to be a success in the world of work and to be able to provide for their family. And I think most men probably continue to judge themselves, really, in terms of how successful they are in work, not how good a father they are.
Hmm.
So in that sense, I think probably things have not changed all that much.
Hmm. And it seems sometimes, too, that in a way that, you know, certainly we have talked a lot about how the various things that the women's movement has meant for lives of women in this country and how it has opened their possibilities. And yet at the same time, it seems that they not only do they have to struggle with what it has been traditional women's roles, particularly as wife and mother, we've given them another, and that is the career person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost as if an added burden, an extra added burden has been given them. I wonder, is it in some way, has something like that happened with men, where we still expect them to be very career-oriented and all about their work, and then at the same time, we've also said, but there's this other role that in the past you were kind of excused from that now we're expecting you to take on, and that is be more involved with your children particularly, but also be all those things that it seems difficult for men to be, like in touch with their feelings and communicative and you know, concerned with being equal partner with their wives and, you know, all those things that, as I say, it seems kind of tough for us to do.
Well, you know, I think when traditional roles get redefined and ambiguous, we all get a little anxious, and I think that that's what a lot of us deal with these days, which is that, traditional definitions have been called into question, and I think the women's movement has actually been an extraordinarily good thing for men, because it has meant that it opened up a whole new world of possibilities for a lot of men. Once a partner or a wife goes out to work, it means that, in fact, family life is also opened up for the husband to take more responsibility for, and I think that that's a real gift for many men, but I think it also creates a lot of dilemmas and leaves us wondering how are we going to juggle all these different parts of our lives, just as women have been struggling with as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that for a lot of guys, there is a sense of kind of going into new territory and wondering, you know, how do I do this, and is it manly, and is it, if I have too much feelings, is that okay? Is it okay for me to be close to my children, to spend a lot of time with my children? You know, I think it opens up all kinds of new questions for a lot of fathers.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, Dr. Oshison, we're having a little bit of a problem, and I think that it has to do with the phone that you're using. And my concern is only that the people who are listening to us might find it difficult to understand you because there seems to be a lot of sibilance on the phone. Is there any possibility there would be a different phone that you could use?
Let me move and see. There's some activity outside here, which your listeners may be hearing. Let me see if I can move. Just hold on a sec.
Okay. Well, this will give me a good opportunity then to reintroduce the guest that we're talking to this morning. We're speaking with Dr. Samuel Oshison. He is chair of the psychology faculty at the Fielding Institute. He also teaches at Harvard Med School, and he is, in addition, a psychotherapist in private practice. He's taught at Harvard, at MIT, at University of Massachusetts. He's the author of a book that we've talked about here. This is a book that was first published back in 1986, and has sold over 150,000 copies in paperback. It's been on several bestseller lists, and it now has been reprinted by Contemporary Books, so it's available in the paperback, and it's not terribly expensive. The title of the book is Finding Our Fathers, How a Man's Life is Shaped by His Relationship with His Father. And questions are certainly welcome if you'd like to call in and talk with our guests. Maybe you have some comments, some questions, whatever is on your mind, that certainly would be fine. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You in the book, you write very clearly that you think that in order for us to come to terms with ourselves as men, we have to first come to terms with our fathers.
Yes, that's right.
Can you expand on that some?
Yeah. By the way, is this a better connection? Can you hear me okay?
Well, I'm afraid it's about like it was before. I guess maybe we'll just have to live with it and hope that the listeners will be patient with us.
I think that one of the tasks of aging for men is to begin to see their fathers in a realistic way. I think that growing up, there are a lot of ways in which a lot of pressures on fathers and sons that make it difficult for sons to actually see their fathers as real people, so that we tend to idolize them as larger than life and as great heroes, or we tend to demonize them and see them as failures or as judgmental and unforgiving. And I think as children, it's very easy to get a kind of cartoon image of your father. As we grow older, I think one of the tasks is to begin to see your father as a real person, not as an impossible hero or as an impossible demon, but as a man who was successful in some ways, struggled in other ways, had his flaws, but also had his positive attributes, and that's a very important milestone in the life of a grown son, to begin to see his father as a real person, because that allows the son to also forgive himself and to see himself as just a real person and not have impossible standards that he applies to himself as well as to his father.
I'll tell you what, we're still, I'm sorry to have to do this, we're still having a little bit of a problem. I think my producer, the guy you first talked to at the beginning, Jack Brighton, is going to get on the line with you, and maybe they'll have a suggestion.
Okay.
I hate to burden you with this, but as I say, I'm what I want is for the people who are listening us to be able to hear what you have to say. So,
sure, David, no, go ahead, I'm right here.
Very good. We'll just put you back on hold for just a second. Give me, again, the opportunity to talk about our guest here, Sam Osherson. The book is Finding Our Fathers. It's recently been republished. It's a book that sold very widely and is in a lot of people's minds considered to be a classic on this subject about the relationship between fathers and sons. Our guest is the author of three other books, including one that was also critically acclaimed, a book titled Wrestling with Love, How Men Struggle with Intimacy. So if you're interested in that subject, you can go on to and take a look at that book. And again, the one that we mentioned here, Finding Our Fathers, should now be out again in bookstores. It's available in paperback. It is not terribly expensive. And questions also are welcome. We'd certainly be happy to hear from some folks this morning. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good. Anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, we're going to try again,
okay.
See how we do. How much of this, we've talked about the fact that it seems that often that men feel that they haven't been able to talk with their fathers about their experiences. Not only it's sort of the idea that I don't really sort of talk about what's going on with me. He doesn't really talk about what's going on with him, and so if I learn about being a man and about being a father, it's almost just because all I can do is stand back and watch. And I don't get a lot of insight into what's going on inside. You know, if we have a hard time talking about our feelings with the women in our lives, it's probably even more difficult to talk about them with the important men in our lives. Is that, you think, what's really has been the significant sort of issue for a long time, that is, you know, even fathers and sons, they somehow can't really talk about things that are really important and deep to them?
Well, I think, you know, men traditionally have kind of played their cards close to their vest. I mean, we learn early on, I think, as boys and as men, that if you show too much feeling, you become a target, you know, on the playground, in the classroom, in the office, or in the boardroom. You know, you learn that if you show too much feeling, other people will then take advantage or mock you or make fun of you. So I think that one of the lessons that boys learn and that men live by is not to show too much feeling. And I think when we become fathers, we often have an enormous amount of feeling for our children. And I think one of the ironies of fatherhood is that you often have more feeling than you know quite what to do with. You know, the experience of having a child and suddenly having this attachment that's so powerful. So I think often fathers keep a lot to themselves. Now, sons sometimes don't want to hear, so it can be difficult for a father to know kind of how much to say, because even if a father talks, sometimes the son is, you know, one of the key things that a son is trying to do is to connect to his father, but also to be independent from him. And I think one of the dances of fatherhood is learning how much you can say to your son and how much your son wants to hear. But I do think that you can never tell a son too much that you love him. And I think many sons go through life really yearning to know that really they are the beloved son of their father. And fathers are sometimes shy about really saying that. Mm-hmm. I've worked with so many fathers who basically say, look, I provided for my family, And if love is defined by what I do, of course I love my children. And what they meant was that their love was expressed by how hard they worked and the sacrifices that they made for their families, which is true. But often sons don't know that, and nor do daughters, and they don't see that. And so often sons and daughters want to hear from their fathers, you know, that you matter to me, that I love you and that I miss you when I'm away. And sometimes fathers don't realize that they need to put those things into words.
Mm-hmm. And that, I suppose that could be another, that's another one of these things that either we learn or we don't learn from our fathers, and that then we carry that into the relationship with our children, and this becomes sort of a perpetuating pattern.
Yeah, yes, although it's certainly possible to learn as an adult. I know, you know, I travel in my work. I do a fair amount of traveling, and I still remember how my son, when he was younger, and I would be traveling, we'd talk on the phone, and he'd say, "I miss you." And I would say, "I know, I know." And finally it occurred to me that actually what I wanted to say was, "I miss you too." And that was a very different answer than if I say, "I know you miss me." And I, you know, so I do think that we can kind of learn as adults to kind of give back to our children and to let them know that they're important to us as well.
Yeah. It's an interesting example. Now, it may seem in some ways to be small, but I guess the question really is now, why is that so hard? why is it so hard to, you know, to say, instead of saying, "I know you miss me," why is that so hard to say, "I miss you too"?
Well, you know, I can't speak for all, but I do think, looking at myself and other men I know, I think that one of the reasons it's hard is because we're not used to looking at ourselves as being vulnerable and having feelings. You know, one of the curses of fatherhood, I think, is that as a father, you think of yourself as needing to be the authority, the rule setter, the disciplinarian, you know, all of which are important things for fathers to do. But I think it's another step for a father to also realize that, you know, he's vulnerable in this process too as a father, and that to speak of missing your child is to say that I have needs too, and often fathers are not used to kind of looking at that and to understanding that they're feeling people in their relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. There was, and it's now been some time since anybody talked about it, a thing going on in this country that some people called a men's movement, and which it also ended up, I think, getting a lot of ridicule. People actually made fun of it, you know, guys going out in the woods and beating on drums and that kind of stuff. But at least at that time, there was some discussion about the whole issue of gender roles, and yeah, certainly there was discussion about relationships between men and their fathers, and about some men really feeling that they had somehow missed something, that it wasn't what they wanted. And, you know, for what, this was around for a while, and it got a fair amount of attention in the popular media. And at least it was, in one respect, it was encouraging that maybe we were starting to think about the whole issue of what it means to be a man, and at least ask the question, well, do we want to change this? You know, is it okay the way it is? Do we think that it should be different? And that was sort of, it seemed sort of to be there and gone. And I wonder if what you think about it, what happened to it, and whether in fact that there is any sort of a, whether you think that it's had any lasting impact.
Well, that's an interesting question, actually. I think that the, you know, again, to speak of a men's movement is as tricky as it is to speak of a women's movement. There were so many different forces in the men's movement as there were in the women's movement, and so many different personalities and opportunities that it's hard to generalize, because I think there were some very good things in the men's movement and some not so good things. I think that it helped many of us begin to take our own experience seriously, and I think many men reached out to other men and to other women and made important friendships and connections that are still ongoing as a result of that. You know, it's kind of like trying to find a vocabulary to talk about experiences that you didn't have words for before, and I think the men's movement really did give a lot of men ways of talking about their experience and permission to have friendships with other men and with women that before then they may not have had. I think that it quickly becomes a topic of social humor, as you say, in part because I think that when men really talk, about what they're experiencing. It reminds us of some of the difficulties and sacrifices that men make to live up to what's being asked of them in this culture. And I think that one of the ways our culture deals with that is by making it into a topic of jokes, you know, of men running off into the woods naked beating drums, you know, which is really not what the men's movement in large part was about. And I think that what happens is that, you know, it reminds me a little bit of a couple I worked with a long time ago where it was a husband and wife, both quite successful, and they were in counseling because, as the wife said, I wish my husband would talk more and tell me more what he's feeling. And after a number of sessions, the husband began to get in touch with, actually, his feeling of never having been very much loved by his father, and at one point started to cry about that, and he shed a lot of tears. And his wife looked at me at that point and said, you know, I always wanted him to open up, but not like that. And, you know, what she was really doing was giving a voice to how uncomfortable it felt to her to see that her husband, who she depended on to be tough and all of that, was also, you know, a real human being with his sorrows and that in some ways his success in the real world as a tough-minded lawyer had also masked the fact that he also had some sorrow. And I think it made her feel uncomfortable. My hunch is the men's movement did that too, because we depend on men to be tough and to be good warriors and good soldiers. And when warriors cry, I think it makes everybody nervous. And my hunch is that's part of why the men's movement ran into such difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Well, has that had any sort of, do you think, lasting impact on society?
Well, I think we live in a society now where there are more options for men and where men do feel permission to have a real relationship with their kids, to sometimes give some priority to their families rather than to their work lives, where they may value male friendships. And I think some of that did come out of, in quotes, the men's movement. I don't think it's had a long-lasting major effect on society in any really dramatic way, but I think it has given many men more permission to have richer lives.
We are just a little bit past the midpoint of this first hour of Focus 580, and I probably should introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Dr. Samuel Osherson. He chairs the psychology faculty at the Fielding Institute. He also teaches at Harvard Med School and is a psychotherapist in private practice. And in addition to having taught teaching at Harvard, he's also taught at MIT and University of Massachusetts. And he is the author of this book that we have mentioned that first came out in 1986 and now has been republished. It's titled Finding Our Fathers, How a Man's Life is Shaped by His Relationship with His Father. And if you're interested in reading it, it's certainly out. It's published by Contemporary Books and came out in June, is paperback, and so is not terribly expensive. And if you want to look at it, it's out there in bookstores. And, of course, your questions, comments are welcome if you'd like to join in the conversation. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL or 9455. That's probably really easier to do, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So they're almost the same, but not quite. And if it would be a long-distance call, if we use that other number, that 800-222-9455, and locally, 333-9455. The book primarily is about relationships between fathers and sons, but I think you do have some things to say about relationships between fathers and daughters. And it's sometimes, I think, when we talk about, problematic parent-child relationships, we do break them down according to gender, and we spend a lot of time talking about mothers and daughters and about fathers and sons. What might you have to say about relationships between fathers and their daughters?
Oh, I think it's a very important relationship. It takes about a minute of being a father of a daughter to realize there's a whole other story here besides the father-son one. Fathers are the first man in the lives of their daughters, and I think, as with sons, fathers model for their daughters what it means to be loved by a man. And many daughters have spoken to me about the real importance that of feeling that their fathers were there for them and were supportive of them and welcome them into, you know, the masculine world by, you know, inviting their daughters into their shops or out on the sports field or, you know, supported that part of them. So I think that the father-daughter relationship is a very important one.
It looks like we're getting another a caller here lined up to join in the conversation, and we'd certainly, again, would welcome anybody, as you've been listening, if you have some thoughts to offer, questions, comments, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Callers in Southern Illinois, let's bring them in. It's line number 4.
How you doing?
Hi.
I don't know that I have any insight or anything, but it's kind of interesting what you said. You know, I haven't had a father figure growing up, but for some reason I have felt the importance of giving my children the verbal wording of loving them. I show it affectionately, but I do believe they need to know, and I continually tell my children and hold them I love them. You know, I try to put it in forms of numbers, you know. I tell them quadrillion, I love them to quadrillion times, you know, to the sky and back, things like that, you know, because they're some young kids. And just the other day, he kind of shocked me. He said he loved me to the end of the numbers and back. I thought that was pretty interesting. I thought I might share it, even though, you know, I don't know, I haven't read your book or anything, but, and it does make me feel uncomfortable to do that, but I do force myself, and I do love my children. I'll just sit back and listen. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's a wonderful story, really. And now you can start numbering all over. You can go to the end of the numbers plus one, and you can just keep the numbers going. I think it really is important for kids to hear these things, because kids misinterpret things so easily when they're young. I mean, we misinterpret things pretty easily when we're old, too, but I think as a young child, you often really don't have a clue as to what your parents are feeling sometimes. So actually having things said in words, I think, can really be important. By the way, that boy's comment is really wonderful, because what he's saying is, you know, I love you to infinity, you know, more than there are numbers. And that's also a nice way of putting it.
There, you know, maybe some people who are listening whose fathers are gone, they've passed, and it's past the point of having that conversation.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are people who find that really difficult and who feel that here they have unresolved business, and that there's no, at this point, there's no going back to do that. And you know, you probably have seen people like that. Maybe professionally I've seen people like that. How does one deal with a situation like that?
Well, you know, David, that's a really good question. Many people whose fathers have died have told me that the relationship continues even past the grave, in the sense that grown sons will talk about thinking about their father a lot. Some men have talked about thinking about their father every day, you know, and even sometimes having conversations in their mind with them about, you know, what my dad would think about this decision or that decision, or boy, he would have really chuckled if he had seen his granddaughter do this or that. So that in their mind, they're really continuing and sometimes changing the relationship in their minds as they begin to deepen their picture of their father. Sometimes there's work that can be done as well with other family members. Remember, if the trick is to really begin to understand who your father was and to get past some of the stereotypes and cartoon figures of your childhood, some men have talked about becoming like, you know, detectives in their family and going to talk to aunts and uncles and other people who knew their fathers, trying to get a better picture of why their father made these decisions or that decision at that point in their life, trying to understand the man better. So I think that, you know, I've often said it's never over between fathers and sons, and I think that that's true even after death. It's not the same thing as kind of, you know, having your father say, you know, I'm really so proud of you and I love you and I am, you know, and to say that directly, it's not the same thing. But I think sometimes we get into impossible expectations too, because even when your father is alive, you may not have worked everything out perfectly. In fact, most people I know, you know, what you want is you want to kind of have a kind of friendship with your father, and many men don't necessarily work everything out with their fathers. I think that's an impossible goal for many of us. So that, even when a father is no longer physically there, I think that there is the possibility of continuing to work on the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's true also, if I could just say,
I think
it's also true for fathers who are divorced. I think we shouldn't make the mistake of assuming that you have to be physically present to be psychologically present. Being physically in the home, many fathers, in Finding Our Fathers, I write a lot about fathers who were there physically in the home but were psychologically absent. They were, stuck in front of the TV or hiding behind the newspaper and who were not really very psychologically present. So I think you can be psychologically present even if you're not physically there. And many fathers who are divorced, despite the stereotypes, many fathers who are divorced find very courageous and rich ways to be in touch with their children and to communicate to their sons and daughters that they're important to them via letters, the telephone, by knowing what's going on in their life. I think that's true even if you're a father who is not literally always there physically.
Mm-hmm. Something that I guess I thought about quite a bit myself recently, and I think it's one of those challenges that people feel as they get older and their parents get older. And I think it's probably works on both. It doesn't matter what the gender of the child and the parent is. And that is trying to achieve some sort of relationship between parent and child where there is some, it's as much as can be, an adult-to-adult relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems that's, they're always going to be the parent, you're always going to be the child, and that something of that's going to be there. And yet, it seems necessary and appropriate at some point where you start to be a little, you have a different kind of relationship, and it seems, though, to be very difficult to move from that the kind of relationship that we had with our parents when we were children,
mm-hmm.
to a different kind of thing now that we are adults and maybe even have children of our own.
Well, I think, it's remarkable how much as a grown son or grown daughter, your parent is still your parent,
mm-hmm.
Even though you may be much more successful in material ways. And still, I think it's hard for us not to look on our parents still as our parent. I do think that one of the things that happens as we age is that there's a shift in the relationship. As parents become elderly, they will often then begin to turn towards the middle generation, those of us who are grown sons and daughters. And sometimes people will talk about feeling that their parents have become at times like children to them. But even so, they're still your parents, and psychologically they occupy, I think, that parental place in our minds, even though you sometimes will have more authority and control over their lives than you did when you, clearly than when you were younger.
Hmm. I wonder if you feel that men, as they get older, maybe start thinking more and more about their relationship with their children. Maybe I'm just thinking about my own father that he's been retired for a number of years. He obviously would like to see more of his children, and it's not all that easy for us to spend time with him. And I'm 48, he's 74, and now we have this interesting role reversal that he'd like to have more of my time, but because I'm so busy, particularly with work,
mm-hmm.
I have a real hard time, giving him the time that he would like to have.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the ironies, which is that as we age, psychologists talk about one of the tasks of aging is coming to terms with what's called generativity. Generativity being the desire to feel that you have been generative in the world, that you have in your relationships been able to make things happen and given to others. And there's a kind of shift away from, just wanting to be successful in the workplace towards wanting relationships to be more fulfilling. And I think that as fathers age into their 60s and 70s, they often want to have more connection with children. And ironically, we're in the middle years, in our 40s and 50s, and we're, oriented towards the pressures of the real world and making it in the real world. There's a wonderful Doonesbury cartoon that really captures that. I don't know if you read Doonesbury, but at one point his father, Doonesbury's father, calls him, and he's still in college at that point, and his father says, "So what are you up to, son?" And he says, "Oh, Dad, I've got a philosophy exam. I've been studying for it." And his father says, "Philosophy? Oh, that's so interesting. I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about mortality and about death." And his father goes into this long spiel about what's on his mind, which is mortality and aging. And his son is listening. And then Doonesbury says, he says, "Dad, mortality? That's just a 5-point question on the exam." And of course, it captures the really different spaces that the father and son are in. You know, to the more youthful son, he's not thinking about, you know, eternal questions of aging. And the father, who's somewhat older, is thinking about, you know, mortality and getting things together. And this is what's important. And, you know, they're just seeing things in different ways.
Mm. Well, let's take another. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them. They're in Champaign, and it's line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm in my 70s, and when I was growing up, my parents and most parents didn't say to their children, "I love you," and we didn't expect it because we knew they loved us. It just, you know, just wasn't necessary to us. I know it's the thing now, and I've learned to do it. But when I ask my friends now, "Did your parents ever say, 'I love you'?'" And they said, "No, we knew they loved us." So it's kind of a generational thing, I guess. But
well,
we never doubted that our parents and our grandparents and all our relatives loved us.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, I think there have been a lot of changes in family life. I mean, if you go back to the 1930s and 40s to the pre-World War II years, the world was very different. And I think that families were really very much more oriented towards making it through difficult times and being able to deal with some of the challenges that this country was going through in those years. And I think that in some ways it may, and it was also much less of a psychological generation. People did not necessarily talk in this kind of psychological vocabulary that we have that has come of age since the Second World War in this country. So that it may have been back then that some things were just taken for granted. And how nice that you felt secure in that love in your family.
Yeah, I think we all did. We lived in a small town, and, you know, just I guess we felt actions spoke louder than words, and it just never occurred to us they had to say it because they showed us all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's
well, thanks for the call. Okay. Well, though, Dr. Osherson, I guess you would still say that you would think that it not only is it important to show that you love your kids and the people who are significant in your life, but to say so as well.
Well, I think it's nice to do both, actually. You know, sometimes we say things because we're not sure if we're really demonstrating it, and we kind of feel defensive, and we hope that if we say it, it'll make up for not having demonstrating it. And I think, in fact, it's nice to do both. I think what's important is to be able to show your children that you know where they're at to the best that you can. It's impossible to really know always where our children are psychologically, of course. That's one of the dilemmas of being a parent. But I do think that one of the keys to good parenting in today's world is being able to stay in connection with your kids. And to some extent that means showing them that they're not simply a little form of you, and that all you can relate to is the way in which they gratify you, but to show them that you also see that they're separate people with their own agendas, and that you have some you may not agree with it always, but that you respect the fact that they're trying to come to terms with understanding life too. And I think to be able to do that means to be able to engage them in a dialogue, not necessarily that everything is in words, but that you're able to show them that you get it, that they're struggling as people too, and that you respect that process.
Mm. What do you think about images of fathers and fatherhood in popular media?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. You know, I think fathers carry an enormous weight in our minds, I think. You know, fathers are mythic figures in the lives of most of us, in the sense that they're, you know, some people feel like religion is in part based on longings for there to be a powerful figure out there who can make the world safe and protect us. And I think often fathers carry that weight in families too. So because they're often carry such psychological weight, I think the temptation is also to want to cut fathers down to size and to lampoon them and spoof them. And I think that a lot of the social images of fathers actually undercuts fathers in subtle or not so subtle ways, so that I think it helps fathers to see fathers in movies and on TV, but I think often the images kind of give a mixed message that to be a father is a little bit to be a buffoon.
If there was somebody listening who was approaching fatherhood, say for the first time, and I'm certain that someone like that would have plenty of stuff to worry about. You know, I'd sort of be hesitant to give them yet one more thing to think about. But if for someone in that situation who was going to be a father, would there be some particular things that you would encourage him to be thinking about?
Well, I would encourage him to be enjoying this process, which can be kind of hair-raising for new fathers. I remember back to those days. It's one of those experiences where, you know something really big is going to happen. You have not got a clue exactly what it really means in some ways. I think it's a wonderful experience and a scary experience of being a parent. All I can tell you is what has helped me and what I've heard from other men that I've talked to, and what I hear is that when you are becoming a father, it's important to think about your own dad and what you got and what you didn't get from your own father. It's important to reach out to your partner, to your spouse, and to try to be upfront about some of the things that you're hopeful for about fatherhood, and also some of the vulnerabilities you have. And I found it really helpful to reach out to other men. Actually, there's not a lot of support for new fathers. A lot of attention goes to the new mother, understandably, because she's just given birth, and we tend still, I think, to associate childbirth with mothers. But there's a whole other experience that you're going through as a father, and often you don't get a lot of social support in transiting into the fatherhood role. So I found it really helpful to talk to other guys and to try to have conversations with friends about what it was like to become a father and to be a father. I still do. I still treasure my male friends. I have two teenagers, and I still treasure both my male friends and my female friends in terms of talking about parenthood. For all of our talk in our culture about parenthood, I still think it is a very closed topic, and one that a lot of people somehow don't feel like they're doing well enough at. And so I have found it really important to try to make it a part of my conversation, the good times and the difficult times.
Well, at that, we will have to stop because we've come to the end of the time. We want to say thanks very much for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, David. Thank you.